Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Clapham Grand. Please welcome a man whose kids have lost all respect for him, but they have no respect for him anyway. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Hello. Wow. There's even people up there. It's absolutely jam-packed, social distance. Theatre. Thank you very much. Love to see you all. Thank you so much for coming out. Welcome to Richard Herring's Loosening Silo Taps podcast. Got to come up with new... There's so many podcasts, you've got to come up with new ideas. What we're going to do each week is find a silo. We don't know what's in it. We're going to... I don't even know if silos have taps on them. We're going to loosen the tap, and then we'll find out what's inside the silo. Though I was talking to the man and lady from the Mastermind game box, not the game with the pegs in it. I feel I might have used them before, but, you know, it's hard to... They call it Rahalastapa, but anyway. So, welcome. Thank you very much. It's been a nice week. We're sort of slightly getting out into the world again, being a little bit spontaneous. I spontaneously took my daughter to a fun fair on Saturday, which was lots of fun. And then we went back yesterday on Sunday because we'd had so much fun. And my daughter was determined to get this. There's a big toy unicorn. She's obsessed with unicorns. And she wanted to win it, and I said, it'll be impossible to win it. And she said, go and we'll go. And we went to the stall, and the lady there, my daughter, 6-year-old daughter, said, can I ever go? And there he said, you won't be able to do it. I'm going to tell you now, you won't be able to do it. You had to knock down 6 cans, you know, but you have to knock them completely off the shelf, right? And so I said, and so she was very nice and didn't try. You know, it's nice to have an honest person at a fair. Yeah, don't do this.
It's a waste of money. And I said, well, maybe I can have a go for you, Phoebe. And she said to me, you won't be able to do it. So, and I said, well, I think I probably will be able to do it. She really didn't want the money, so I had to go, and I missed. The cans were there, and I was here, and I missed with the first two shots and hit them the second time, but none of them came off. So you could see my kids, the little respect they had for me. My wife said, I don't understand, you were so close. She can't get out of it. She's married. I guess none of them can get out of it. They're all... And we went to see... we went to the British Museum to see the Thomas Becket exhibition. Oh, yeah. Oh, this is classy. I studied English history at university, and basically all I remember from that time is the question, how did the death of Thomas Becket affect Anglo-Papal relations in the 12th century? Don't remember the answer. I imagine not good. I don't know if that's what my essay said. It's quite a good, but you know, given I've got a 2-1 in history from Oxford University. I don't mention it, Oxford University. And I discovered something at the Thomas Becket exhibition that I did not know about. That there was a king I'd never heard of, King Henry the Young King. Have you heard of King Henry the Young King? You're very clever people. No, I'd never heard of him, and I was confused because it was Henry the Second. And then they were talking about King John and his son, Henry III. I was going, but how, what about King Henry the Young King? You just mentioned being crowned. Surely he's Henry III. He's not. He was King Henry II's son, who was crowned during King Henry II's reign, but is not an official king. That's not right, is it? If he's been crowned, he's King Henry III. The whole of English history is wrong. And I have decided that I am now going to retrospectively go back and bump all the kings after Henry II up one. It'll be confusing for a little while, but... So King Henry the Young King is King Henry the Third. King Henry the Third is now King Henry the Fourth. King Henry the Eighth is King Henry the Ninth. It's all right, I'm Henry the Ninth, I am. You have to change a few things. It's easy to remember because King Henry the Ninth had 6 wives, 6 to 9. 6, it sounds a bit like 69. Kids will remember that. They'll remember it. So I think that'll work. No one else is doing the old King Henry the Younger King stuff, are they? That's what you come out to see me for. Not doing any material from pre-COVID times. And that's what you get. Oh, I did a joke on Twitter. Piers Morgan tweeted today that he'd received a letter that had just been, he said, addressed to Piers Morgan, national icon. It looked a bit like it might say something else. And he said, it still got to me. And I tweeted, yeah, but the same is true if you just put wanker on an envelope. Proper joke. That's what people want. They don't want the King Henry. That's the thing. You guys love the King Henry the Younger King stuff. It's not commercial. Right, well, crack straight on. I can't tell you, it's so lovely to have an audience back doing these. It makes so much difference. I'm wearing trousers and everything, so that's the main difference. And I can no longer masturbate under the desk whilst I'm talking to Richard Osman. Oh, I can't say, be careful when you say that was a joke. I didn't do that. Oh, shit. It's over. You can't even joke about it now, can you? You can't even say that. Because if you say it, that's it. And I've said it, so that's it. You can't even say it. That's the thing. These white podcasts are fine. We can't say the stuff that we just carry on saying. So, my guest this week is probably best known for her performance as a water nymph in the film Inkheart. Will you please welcome the amazing Jessie Cave, ladies and gentlemen? Here she is. Come in, sit down. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome. How
thank
are you?
Thank you. I'm good, thank you.
Good, I'm all right as well. Well, I've had a bit of a cold, but I'm getting over it.
Oh,
It's better than last week.
Have you been COVID tested?
Nah, just thought, give it.
Okay, good.
You've had COVID, though,
yeah,
right?
I've had
so
it,
we're, you're safe.
Yes. Well, I'm half safe.
Or dangerous?
Yes.
How long ago since you had COVID?
A long time now, so it's like, you know, a few months.
Okay,
it's fine.
You're probably at risk. No, it's not. Well, my son was tested, and he had the same thing, so I'm guessing.
Don't worry, I trust you. It's okay.
Yeah, it's all right. That's how it. That's just how it should have worked from the start, Jesse. We should. If you trust someone, you should be allowed to talk to them and do what you like with them.
It's true.
That's what Boris Johnson. That's sort of what he did. Sort of what he did. It worked out pretty well. Well, look, it's lovely. Do you remember being a water nymph in Cart?
Yeah, I think about that every day.
Do you?
Just because it was like my first job as an actress. Well, my second job, and I was water nymph 3, mm-hmm. and there were two other water nymphs. Anyway, to cut a long story short, basically I got an eye cyst boil thing because okay. The director, I was very young and innocent, and there was like a hot tub thing, which they were making out as a lagoon, you know, like with plants and stuff. And we had to go in, and it was warm water. And we were in these, like, nymph outfits. And the two other nymphs, 1 and 2, were models, like very tall, very pretty models. And but they were very stupid, like very, very stupid. And the director kept shouting at us, right now, just bob up and down in the water. And they just couldn't understand. And so their dresses kept riding up, and they kept complaining to the director, like, we can't go under the water. And I was like, well, I can. So I kept like bobbing up. And he was like, yeah, can you go under the water? Can you go under the water and then look around, and we'll catch you underwater with the camera? And I was like, yeah, I can. Of course I can. Because I was so happy I was going to get a close-up as a, you know, an extra, and a supporting artist, whatever. And basically I didn't realize that the water was very unsafe.
Right.
And very dirty, and it was warm water. So whenever, I just got this thing that I couldn't. So I was very happy for the close-up, but then I actually had to have a minor operation. and it kind of, it was really, really awful.
Right. Good. I'm glad I brought it back up again.
Thank you very much. I still think of the knife going in, and it's just really horrible.
Yeah.
So
a knife going into your eye.
To my eye. They had to get it out.
Yeah. I've had a testicle removed, so fuck you. Did a knife go in your eye? You still got the eye?
Oh. Yes, I still have the eye. But I do have a little bump.
Okay.
You probably don't have
a little... I don't have a little bump.
No.
There was a little bump there for a while, but then okay. I all decayed.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah. It was a very exciting experience. You'll hear a lot about it, don't worry. I wasn't going to bring it up this podcast, but...
I was going to bring up my eye cyst, so...
No, there you go. That's what we get.
Yeah.
Well, you know, look, that's a good story for best known for, because often people can't remember even being in the thing. You were a county-level swimmer and a tennis player as a youngster as well, so was that how you became a water nymph, because of your swimming prowess?
No, not at all. I was just wearing pink jeans, and the casting director liked the jeans, and this is like an align... This is honestly how ridiculous the industry is, I think, at some points. When you're wearing something and a casting director likes it, they think you're good.
Yes.
So that's why. Yeah, no, I was actually a national tennis player. I was a canter swimmer too, and I my mum was very, very good at, you know, me and my siblings, we were all, athletics.
Yeah.
Athletics. Which hasn't stood me well in my future life.
I was very unathletic, I have to say, so I'm impressed by that. And one of your early jobs, we'll get this out of the way, was in a film called Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
Mm.
And you played... my wife loves Harry Potter, and we once had to play Harry Potter Trivial Pursuit at Christmas.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And I couldn't do anything. And I hate Harry Potter and everything about it as a result. You played Lavender Brown, the important character of Lavender Brown, probably one of the main characters. I don't know.
You're like my boyfriend. He literally stubbornly doesn't know anything about Harry Potter. He thinks I played Hermione. It's really annoying.
I've watched them all.
You've watched them all?
Yeah, but you know, I've been in the room when they're on. We started watching with the kids, and then they got really scared of the first one really quickly. So my wife went, "Oh, this is probably a bit too soon."
Yeah,
for the 3-year-old.
Yeah, for the 3-year-olds, that is too soon. But now, like 6 and 4, my kids are finally like really liking them. So I said, "Oh, which one's your favourite film then? which one out of all of them? They know that I'm in the sixth one, and they were like, not the sixth one.
So you came in sort of late, so you didn't have, because I'm sort of fascinated by that weird experience that the cast must have had through their having their whole childhood on that same set.
Yeah.
So it was like being at school for most of the
kids. They were at school on set.
Yeah.
So they grew up there. It's I found it really fascinating too, because I was 20 when I did the job. So
right.
When I turned up, it was like an institution. It was they were a family. The whole crew and everyone on it had been on it for, most of the crew were on it for over 10 years.
Yeah.
So I did feel it was very obvious to me that I had to kind of be liked. I had to kind of, and they and win their trust.
Yeah.
And I didn't. And they didn't like me. But I think Rupert Grint liked me, but Emma didn't. I don't think like me.
Well, that's because you had to kiss. I saw that. I saw a little, someone's helpfully put together all of your bits into one YouTube video.
Oh yeah.
And you had to kiss. You were kissing old Ron Weasley.
Nice. I don't think that's why she didn't like me, to be fair. No, I know why she didn't like me.
Okay, why?
Because she, I have said this before many times, but I hope one day she hears. So but she basically, I was a slightly older than her, and she wanted, she thought, she seemed to like me at the beginning, and she thought I was a bit cool. So she thought I would have some tips about restaurants. So she was like, do you know anywhere to go in Soho that's cool? And I just panicked. And I was like, I don't know any cool places. I've never been to a cool... So I was like... And I remember there was just this restaurant that just opened up off Tottenham Court Road, which is still there, and it's yellow. And I thought, oh, it's yellow. It looks cool. That will be fine to recommend to Emma Watson. So I was like, yeah, there's this amazing place. Like, you have to go. And it was basically a noodle bar.
Right.
Like fast food, basically.
Yeah.
I didn't know that when I recommended it to her. And she went on the Friday night, and she came in on the Monday morning, and she came straight up to me and was like, I went to that place, and I got mobbed. She basically got mobbed.
Right.
Because everyone recognized her, and she had a terrible time. And genuinely, after that, she didn't really talk to me.
I mean, yeah, I can see a point, but
it wouldn't be funny to anyone else. But I think she was quite upset about it.
Well, she should. I've got the same size hands as her, exactly, by the way. If you ever see her again, say if you need a hand twin, Richard Herring has the exact same size hands as you.
How do you know that?
Because there are handprints at the start of Harry Potter World, which I had to go to with my wife, who loves Harry Potter, and I put my hand in, and it's an exact. It's like Cinderella. Like, it's like I thought something would open up. You go, and then,
wow,
and you get secret access to the stars part of Harry Potter World. So that's her. Does that look familiar now you look at it? Was that like, why did you take me to that noodle place? Boom. Was that?
She probably doesn't even remember.
It's really horrible, stubby hands, isn't it? Like stubby little hobbit hands.
So she has the same width fingers.
Yeah, look at that. Same everything. There wasn't a gap in there. That's the
whole. I'm sorry. I don't think that's true. I'm so sorry. I just don't believe you. Because she's dainty.
I know, but her hands, she's got a big.
I'm not saying her hands are not dainty.
I've got tiny little child hands. So these would be dainty on a woman. You're looking at the rest of me and thinking, no, he's a butch,
okay.
Huge man. But look at the hands. They're very they're dainty.
Yeah.
Quite thick.
Well, I never really studied her hands.
Okay.
I just would have thought they were very elegant. Not that your hands aren't elegant, but, you know, they're not ballerina's hands, are they?
I don't think she... That's why she's... If you watch her acting, always got her hands in her pocket.
Okay, I'm going to go back and watch Cinderella.
Yeah, have a look around.
Oh, no, not Cinderella, Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, yeah, she's in that, isn't she? She's in that.
Yeah.
So,
I have to stop talking about Emma Watson just in case.
It's all right.
I have so much. I could talk about Emma Watson.
She should know about restaurants. You should be going, what 20-year-old A knows what cool restaurants are in Soho? And B, what film star doesn't have someone telling them where to go?
I know, but I think she wanted like a down-to-earth recommendation, and I gave her that.
She wanted to be mobbed by loads of people. Oh, you sent me to that place, and oh, I got recognised, and everyone was saying how great I was. It was terrible.
No, I do. I did kind of feel over the period of time I knew them, and I did know them now for a couple of years, because yeah. I was in the last one as well. I just die in that one. But
interestingly, your character doesn't die in the book, but it does in the film.
I know. I mean,
that's probably an indication of how well liked you were.
That's good info. But yeah, every day someone comments that under an Instagram that has absolutely no relation to anything, and why did you die in Harry Potter? Whatever I do, that will be the first comment on everything. Anyway, but I did feel really sorry for them as children. I felt sorry for their children selves, because I do feel like that was taken away from them, and they did have a nice time, and they're all still doing acting and seemingly very happy and successful. But I did immediately feel, okay, I don't want my kids to be actors ever. And I could sense that, especially from Daniel. I was like, oh, you would have been such a, I don't know, I just felt really sorry for them.
Yeah, I mean, I feel sorry for them, but they're also
very rich.
Very, very rich, multi-billionaires.
They are so rich.
Yeah.
They are so rich.
Yeah.
And do you know what's also amazing? Is that I was thinking about this, because they are so rich, and they were there every day. But do you know who was also there every day? Is the rest of the kids who were there in the background. They're not rich.
No.
But they were there. Their childhoods were massively altered too. I mean, they weren't as famous, but they had to go there every day.
Sure.
So I just find that slightly unfair. Also, who's not, there's... Okay, I'll just stop.
Nearly got you to open up there and say stuff that you shouldn't say. I'll get you. I should have come to this later when I won your trust. They can make money on... There's all this cameo things, and there's Harry Potter conventions, which you've been to as well, haven't they?
So, yeah, I've had to stop going to them just because I find them... I feel too dirty afterwards. I just feel really... Also, it's not like anyone's really wanting me to go and do a convention, apart from the person who's booked me for a cheap rate. I can get Jessie in. She's desperate. And so you turn up, and there's all these really famous people who are really should be at conventions.
Yeah.
And then you have a stall with your name and your photo, and you're next to established people who are very famous, and they all have long queues. And you have no one. You have no one in front of you. One person occasionally comes up and asks you for the directions of the toilets. And someone feels sorry for you who's working for Comic-Con or something. And they're like, you can sign this for me if you want. And I'm like, thank you. They're really soul-destroying.
Yeah.
So I won't be doing them again. But yeah.
But then it's good, because I don't associate you with Harry Potter. Maybe other people do, but, because you've done other stuff as well. So I think, the thing is to be, if you are, it's much harder, I think, if that was your, if you were one of the twins from Harry Potter, that's their life, that's it.
Yeah.
There's no
but
way
I, back. At first, I kind of was, I kind of judged them for making so much money from conventions.
Right.
So many years later, 14 years later. But then, when I started going to them, I don't know, I went to a few in a row, for some reason I was booked, and I thought, oh, I can go to Germany, I can do this, didn't realise it wasn't, oh, I can go to Paris, didn't realise it was nowhere near Paris, it was a hotel far away from Paris, but when I eventually, and I saw the kind of, how great they were to their fans, they had such a nice time, they were so nice to everybody, and they really just were so good at doing the conventions. I kind of was like, oh, that's great that they can do that.
Also, they can't really act, so it would be, that's... They need that. It's nice to...
I'm not going to bitch about the twins.
I know, I'm allowed. I don't want to get them on. Actually, I would really love to have them on.
They're really nice.
Oh, it's good, I'll have them on.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah. Good, I will.
I mean, that would sell this out, massively.
Do you reckon? I'm not sure.
The Phelps twins, that would just be amazing. You should do that.
Okay, I'm going to do it.
I wish I could be cool and be like, I'll get you in touch, but they don't like me either, so.
As long as they've never listened to this podcast and don't listen to anything that I've said about them before, we'll be fine. And as long as I can get through an hour without just mocking them all the way through, it's going to be good. Good.
Your wife would like that one. Your wife would like that
one. She would love that one.
You should do
it. She hasn't come today, has she, to see you?
She hasn't come today. She's probably looking after your children, to be fair. She, you know.
She's not even doing that.
Okay.
To be fair, she's not very well. But that's not why she didn't come.
Yeah. Great.
So let's have a look at just to where you begin, because you actually went to drama school to be a stagehand, did you? Or like you trained to be a stagehand before deciding to be an actor, which is is that true?
Kind of. I was at art school, right. And then I thought, oh, I'll do set design or something, or learn to be a stagehand.
Okay.
But then my little brother was with a kids agency. And my mum thought that it would be a good idea for me to, because I was very thin at the time, and I'm not. She associated being an actress with being thin, right. Which is actually very accurate. and she was like, "Oh, you're thin at the moment. You're thin," because I just dropped out of Manchester University and I was like very stressed. "So you're thin. We should do something with this. We should do something with this." And I was like, "Yes. What should we do? I'm thin. What should we do?" And so then I auditioned for this kids agency. And again, I was wearing these pink jeans that I only ever wore. Yeah. And they were like, okay, we like the pink jeans. We'll sign you. We'll give you a two-week trial. And in that 2 weeks, I got the audition for Water Nymph 3 and a Nokia advert. And then my third audition was Harry Potter. Wow. So by this point, I was like, okay, I'm not going to be a stage manager. which, again, I would have loved to do. But by that point, I was like, okay, I'll see what happens. And nothing happened, really, after Harry Potter. So I went back to art school. And that started off my weird career of, like, doing a little bit of acting, but mainly doing other stuff.
Well, it's sort of, you are a comedian, but you're more than a comedian. I've got a couple of your books here, and one of them is based on the show, which is At Sunrise, which is also available as right now at Soho On Demand, which I watched this the other day. Fantastic show.
I'm so embarrassed that you watched it.
You shouldn't be. It's great. You did a socially distanced version of this show to your sister.
That's as socially distanced as you can get, really, just to one person.
But it really works. I really love the sides to the camera and all that sort of thing. But once you've... It's sort of a weird thing. Marilyn Ricecup who did... her special in her garage to nobody, basically, and looked like a madwoman as a result, which, I think she is. But she's fantastic. But it's like a lot of... I guess it's a slightly more theatrical show, your show, so it sort of works without, like, having to have...
I was just so relieved. Yeah. I felt really bad because initially we were going to do it with an audience the year before, and then that didn't happen because of the pandemic and everything, and then they said, "Do you want to do it again?" But we can't have an audience, and I was so happy to do it without an audience because it's just I'm not a natural performer in any way, and I tend to perform better when it's to my mum or my sister, so it was just a natural thing to do. But it did make me feel really guilty that my boyfriend who's a stand-up, I was like, "I'm not going to do it to an audience. Isn't that great?" And he was just so, like, he so loves performing to an audience. And he so appreciates how valuable and how important they are to the show. And I kind of felt like, I don't know, watching it back now, the show, I do feel like there is something missing. And it usually was the fact that there was people there and it gave it a different energy.
It really does. I mean, they are, in the audience in many ways are an inconvenience that I hate. I sort of hate them. But it is, having done a whole year without them, I kind of grudgingly respect the money they give to me.
Oh, no!
No, it does make a difference, but it didn't bother me at all. With other things I've watched, I've sort of thought, it's taken me a while to get through the bumpy ride of a performer performing to no one.
Yeah.
And it didn't really feel like that because I think you staged it very well. It's very nice, but it's a very raw and open account of your neuroses. How true to life is it? Because it's sort of. You're honest in a way that people aren't honest about the internal monologue, basically, of being in love with someone or wanting to date someone, all the things that you're not supposed to say and do. you sort of say and do in this in this show?
Like the conversations between the puppets, so yeah. me and Alfie, my boyfriend puppet or ex-boyfriend, and then that like they're verbatim. And they're only verbatim because they were so awful when they were happening. They were kind of ingrained into my brain. So it was really easy to write them down. And I didn't write it at all with any expectation of doing a show. I wrote them down as a form of, like, Dear Diary thing to try and get better because I was just so heartbroken. And my mum was like, you need to go away from... Because my children at the time were 18 months and... 2.5, and I was, you know, we were broken up, and I was, like, very stressed. And she was like, you should go away, and you should do something on your own, basically to write. And I just went, and I sat in this hotel room, and I just started writing all of the conversations I had to try and get a sense of what had happened, because it was just so weird to me that we were broken up, because we had these children together, and we loved each other, and so why were we broken up? And so it was just me finding my way was a way of writing it. So unfortunately, the whole thing is absolutely true.
Right.
And I now, being older and, I don't know, being more cautious in public and things, I just can't believe I did it.
Yeah.
And I can't believe that I did this show so many times, and I can't believe that people are now going to watch it. Like, that's terrifying to me because I'm not that person anymore.
Yeah.
But I am also so glad that that version of myself did have the wherewithal to write it down.
I think, but that's it. It's you know, it is, it's sort of heartbreakingly honest and it's sort of, you're back together again now, right? So, the disparity between your two outlooks and stuff within that, and you're watching you really being in love with this guy who seems to want to go and sleep with other people, which is annoying to you for some reason. It sort of feels just sort of heartbreaking to watch, but it makes it fantastic theatre. But I think that's it. It comes from this real place, and it's performance as therapy for you, but I think that also helps the audience if they're there.
And I also, it was so obvious to me that the people who liked the show were people who had gone through something similar. And I think it's something that people don't really talk about very much. They think that you just have unconventional relationships aren't... I don't know, the fact that you can love someone and also want to sleep with other people, I think that's something that people don't really... talk about very much.
Yeah.
And now that, like, we did get back together, and now we have another baby, and it's still a really unusual, weird relationship, and it's something that we can't really, I don't know, it's just, I think people are quite excited by the idea that you can maybe have a different type of relationship.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, it's modern in that way, and you basically had a baby from a one-night stand
I think the foundation of the relationship was just always so ridiculous that it's kind of just followed that.
So you can get pregnant the first time.
Yeah, can.
Don't listen to them when they... But you know, it's lovely, and the book version of it is so different as well, because it's obviously, I mean, you've got the cartoons in the animations in the live show as well, but it's just a beautifully presented book of this, you know, it's a sort of like bizarre little love story, and then it's, you know, you're back together.
So it has a happy ending. I didn't at the time though, and I think I needed to really believe that we weren't going to get back together in order to get back together.
Sure.
Because I genuinely, from the day that we broke up, I was like, oh, but we'll get back together in a day or so. In a couple of weeks, kind of cried breakup and then eventually just happened. And then we were like, okay, well, we're actually doing this. And he went for it, you know, like he really had a good breakup compared to my breakup. You know, he got through a lot of women. And to such an extent that it was like embarrassing walking around, and he should be ashamed. And even what we didn't add into the recording was that halfway through the show each night, I would ask the audience if anyone in this room has fucked Alfie Brown. And genuinely, a couple of times, I'm sure that there was like that somebody was in there who had.
Right.
And just we couldn't do that in the recording just because I think that's just, that's not fair.
Not with just your sister there.
And not with just Phoebe.
That could have ruined, the show. Yeah.
She flirts with him, though. She fucking flirts with him. But yeah, so...
Well, you're safe for this audience because most of them have not had sex with anyone. So it should be all right. It should be okay. Occasionally have sex with each other, and that's something that you really don't want. It's so nice to have the audience back, and it's so much fun. So much fun to have the audience back. And similarly, Love Sick, which is predates this show. Or does it predate the show? This is your car.
Yeah.
This is, you did a Drew and a cartoon a day on Twitter, was it? Or just all
yeah, back, put them out? Like, when Twitter, like 10 years ago, I would do a doodle a day, and then somebody wanted to publish them, which was really nice. But yeah, I don't do that as much anymore. But now my drawings are kind of, I sell them, and I do hand-drawn, personalized ones, and it's kind of my most steady income that I've got,
nice.
Which is kind of nice, because it's like, I genuinely love, I think that's what I should be doing.
Okay.
I don't think I should be doing performance in any aspect of life. So it's nice to have that.
Yeah. I mean, you say that, but you do a lot of performing and you do a lot of acting. You get a lot of acting jobs.
I get maybe one a year.
But that's still pretty good. There's a lot of actors who don't get one a year.
Yeah, I know. I am very lucky.
Yeah.
But they have dwindled into girl wears glasses who says thank you. and occasionally like a few more lines, but I'm kind of fine with that now, and I really enjoy I appreciate the whole thing now, whereas I think before I'd be like, but I can act, so why aren't I getting that job? But now I'm like, it's cool to be there for the day or a couple of days, and then when you do get a longer job, I genuinely am like, this is too much. I don't want this. This is too much. It's just so stressful, and it's so tiring. And then with children as well, it's like filming is not compatible with children in any way. So I'm it's quite nice being able to pretend that I'm glad about not getting work. So I still would accept it.
But I agree. All the jobs I get are like a day, acting jobs are like a day or two, and it's still too much. It's always cold.
It's cold and early, like a 4:45 pickup. Four.
It's too
it's
early.
Four.
Yeah. Usually Nick Helms' dad or uncle or something. And that's
it's
upsetting because
nice.
I'm only 13 years older than him.
What?
I did two films.
I thought you said I'm only 30 years older
13
than him.
13 years older than him. 13. I did two films with Nick Helms this last six months where I was playing an older relative of his.
Casting directors. It's casting directors.
It is casting. They just see me and think, there's an old Nick Helms.
No, they just don't. I genuinely think casting directors just are slightly. They just.
I never get.
I don't
stuff
trust them.
I've got both those jobs on Instagram. I only joined Instagram last year, and I got two jobs on Instagram. That's how.
Really?
Yeah.
See, Instagram is just the best thing now. It's powerful.
It is.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right, what else? Let's ask you an emergency question. I'm going to ask you, have you ever seen a ghost? Because, you know, apart from me and Harry Potter, that doesn't count.
I think I believed I did at the time.
Yeah, you definitely have, Jessie.
Yeah, okay,
you
cool. Definitely have. I did. It was in my grandma's house. It was white. It was white. And it was moving. So I don't think that is stupid, isn't it? Because if you're going to see a ghost, it's going to be just like an outline. It's not going to be like a cartoon ghost, is it?
It might have been someone in a sheet.
It might have been, but...
Yeah.
No.
No.
No, it just was a white thing moving. But I was eight.
Was it a dog or a cat? I've got a white cat.
No. No, it was big. It was like my height. Okay. And it was moving down the corridor.
Okay.
What the fuck was that?
I don't know. It was a ghost. It was a ghost.
It was a ghost.
Ghost of a sheet. A dead sheet that had come back.
No, I mean, I think I did see a ghost.
Yeah, okay. That's what I'd have guessed.
Is this like a test? And who says they have seen a ghost? You're just like, okay, they're an idiot.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Just, you know, it's basically a long-term experiment, and I can usually guess who's seen a ghost and who hasn't.
Do you think I'd seen a ghost?
I thought you'd have seen a ghost. But and once you're sleep-deprived and you're a parent, I'm living in an old house and there's loads of ghosts in my house. So, you know, I'm obviously mental as well. That's all I'm saying. that's all I'm saying. I'll do another emergency question. Where are my new ones? Oh, this is what... there's something in this. I asked Jackie Weaver. You don't have the authority, Jackie Weaver, about this. And she hadn't done. Do you remember... She couldn't remember. Do you remember the last time you got to sit in the seat on a shopping trolley when you were going round the supermarket? Do you remember, like, the last time? I remember like not being allowed to do it anymore. And I was 28 years old. I remember being too big. And I brought this up because I'd taken my daughter to the supermarket. She's six, but she's quite big six. And she wanted to go in the seat and I could just about get her in. But A, it's hard to lift her, and B, there isn't enough room.
Oh, she's going to be so upset.
Yeah, it's a heartbreaking moment. That's why I'd wondered if you remembered it. If you could have like a shopping trolley manufactured that was big enough for an adult, would you like to go back round on the... I would like to do it again.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure around. that would be such a good thing.
Yeah.
People should do that.
Yeah.
That should be created.
Okay, we'll do that. Let's set that. You and I can set that up.
Couples would be just going around together, just having little fights. I want to go on the stage.
I don't know if you have to go with your own parents, though, whether my elderly parents have to wheel me around. And I'm trying to grab at stuff and put it...
No.
I remember it being hard. That's why I remember it. I just wonder if it's a thing that other people remember.
No.
I must have been eight because I was in West. It was in whatever the supermarket in Western Supermare was, and my mum said you're too big to go in there now.
Aww.
So I was eight. I was little. I was a little eight.
Well, I don't want to have to say that to my son. He's six too. I don't want to have to say to him. He's very small though.
Is he? Yeah. I mean, I can barely lift my daughter. She's so big. I can barely, like, you've got to lift them quite high because they've got to be able to kick their legs.
Aww.
So you've got to properly lift them. I can do it, but...
Yeah. So you don't ever, like, carry them walking now?
I do, but not for very... the boy I do, but with her, if she can go on my shoulders and I can do that for a bit, but it's... If you have to lift them and manoeuvre them, they grow. That's the problem.
I think girls are bigger than... My son is the same weight as my four-year-old.
Right.
So she's like... Yeah, I think maybe girls just develop so much quicker in every single way.
They're better in most ways. My son's
they
an
are.
Idiot.
Yeah.
He won't listen to this. I'll be dead by the time he listens to this. So. You're a fucking idiot. Stay asleep. Stay a fucking sleep. Prick. No, I don't want to come into bed with you. I do, though.
I've started something really bad in lockdown, which is let them watch The Simpsons.
Oh, yeah?
They've watched every episode of The Simpsons. And they do now know the word sex, which is awful. And my six-year-old, I can't help but find it funny. He He responds to everything by saying, no problemo.
I think The Simpsons is good. Mine are watching The Simpsons.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, good. Because some parents are. I said in the playground, and they were really judgmental about it. I mean, they do talk about sex. That's the only thing. And drugs.
Yeah. Well, we do that in our
exactly.
house.
Yeah, exactly. It's fine. I don't think they know what it is. But they definitely know the word sex. So whenever, like, if he sees us kissing, he's like, stop having sex! I don't know if I should correct him.
No, they're at school. They find out this stuff anyway.
Yeah.
My daughter called Jeffrey the giraffe wanker when she was asked to describe it, but she didn't know what it meant.
Okay.
I don't think she got that from me. Would you rather be Kate Middleton or Meghan Markle? I've changed my Prince Harry and Prince William question. But not just for gender reasons. I'm going to ask Johnny Vegas that as well.
Oh, I want to be both of them so I can know the truth.
Okay.
I just want to know. I'm so obsessed with... because I've heard so many different rumours about who... Like, I love Meghan. And I just... watching the Oprah interview was just... I just loved every second. And it was so long as well, and I should not have stayed up that late watching it, but I just did. And but then I heard that actually she's just amazing. She's managed to... Apparently Kate Middleton is actually really nice, and apparently Prince William is evil.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Yeah.
No, it's bad. He's not like Prince Andrew, but he's not that. He's not Prince Andrew level. They're all over 18.
So, but the problem is I like them all. Like them all, but something must have happened.
Yeah. But what do you think? Would you rather be the one who's going to go on and be queen, or would you rather be the one who's in LA doing their own, that's free?
I just think, I just, you can sense how excited Harry is to be free of his reins, and all of the stuff he's doing, suddenly, all of the podcasts he's doing and all of the shows he's doing, he's just so open. And it's just staggering to listen to, because you're like, but he's a royal. People don't, you know, we don't know anything about Prince William, really. We don't know what he's like in a conversation, a long hour and a half long conversation on a podcast. We don't know what he's like. No. Whereas Harry has immediately let us in. And just think of all the opportunities that Meghan and him now have. They're going to have a lot of good stuff and fun. So I think I'd prefer to be Meghan.
Maybe. Be interesting to see, wouldn't it?
But I do kind of feel sorry for Kate. I do. And she only wears kids' face masks. I read that little fact the other day in something. they did a photo of her with a face mask that was really tight, so it was going into her cheek. They're like, Kate Middleton knows best. She only wears kids. She only wears children's face masks because they're the most trendy, or something so stupid. But saying this just made me feel so sorry for her. So get an adult face mask, Kate. You can do it. Just feel really sorry.
Do they even have kids' face masks?
They do.
Aren't they? The kids had to wear them.
No. I don't know why they make them.
It's probably they've got a load of kids' face masks. Someone made thought, oh, fuck, no, kids don't wear them. Sell them to Kate Middleton.
Exactly.
Tell them it's trendy. It's literally the emperor's new clothes. That's literally what it is. So you do a podcast. You've started a podcast in lockdown?
We started between lockdowns.
Okay.
We've done 25 episodes on our first live podcast. It's just such a different thing. I really respect it. Not that I didn't respect it before, but I now kind of know how it's a lot. It's just a lot.
Yeah.
To promote it and to keep doing it each week and to, like, create an audience and to be consistent. It's like
Don't worry about being consistent.
Okay. Don't worry about consistency. Yeah. I think you're quite consistent.
Just keep going. Just keep going.
Okay, just keep going. Yeah. But also, doing it with my sister is kind of a nice form of it's quite cathartic and therapeutic, and I think our relationship has improved because of it.
Is it, you know, I find it sort of, there's a few people who work with siblings and are very clean. You're clearly very, very close to your sister. Is it all plain sailing? Are you that close that it's plain sailing, or is it difficult to work with a sibling? I find it very difficult to work with either of my siblings.
No, we have like horrible fights regularly. We're horrible to each other, but that is we're able to bounce back very quickly.
Yeah.
And so we see through each other. So it means that if one of us is having a bad day or like is not in a good mood before we start the podcast, it's so obvious. And we can ruin each other's day, you know, completely with one line. We can ruin each other's day. So we're now quite careful about making sure that we're on the same level before we go in.
Right.
And we have put out a couple where we've clearly just had a fight and, like, Bibi's, like, raw from crying and I look just, like, deranged. But they're also quite... I'm really glad that we've got that on camera because it's just... Yeah, hopefully we don't fight like this forever. And we definitely have calmed down.
Yeah, I mean, that is... But that's hopefully for what most people's experience of brothers and sisters is that, you know, you can go a lot further and... It springs back, hopefully, to being able to carry on. Because,
yeah.
You know, I suppose families are. That's why I just said families are so, you know, it's such a weird thing where you've got this experience of growing up and living with people and it's insular and hidden away. And then to bring it out into the actual world and show it to everyone, I suppose, is, you know, interesting.
Yeah, and it's not that our target audience is sisters, but we definitely have a huge, the majority of the audience is female, and usually they recommend it to their sister.
Yeah.
So that's quite nice. It's quite niche, but it's really a particular relationship, I think, with sisters. And I do find that you're either close or you hate each other.
Yeah.
I don't know many siblings that, you know, oh yeah, I'll see you next in 6 months. Like, you're either going to see them a lot or you don't ever see them.
Yeah.
If you like them.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do think we're lucky, me and Bibi, because there's 10 years between us, where my other siblings are much closer and they're boys. So it's, yeah, I think that age gap was always really good for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I find her so inspiring the entire time. So.
See, I don't like that. I don't like it when siblings like each other that much. I'm glad you're arguing as well, but, you know.
We argue a lot.
Yeah,
we
good. Well, that's all right then.
Yeah.
I just don't like the closeness of siblings.
Well, I know what you mean. I do know what you mean. And it's not like the we're like an absolutely imperfect family. So it's like, don't worry. Don't worry.
Good, that's good. And you were both in a film together, so you played the same character in the film, Great Expectations, is that right?
She was
the younger version of...
Yeah, she was 14 and I was 24, and she played young Biddy.
Right.
And my role, which was bigger than hers in the screenplay... I was cut quite substantially, so she was actually a really big part in it.
Did your character get killed, even though it doesn't in the book again?
Just right, just killed off.
Oh, yeah. She's 24. Oh, she's dead. She died.
She's dead. Yep.
Straight away.
No, they just cut a really nice scene. I was really upset about it, but now I wouldn't be upset. But at the time, it was just, I felt so embarrassed. I was like, oh, it must have been really bad. But you don't realise that it's a long... They can't keep everything when you shoot everything.
Yeah,
and I just didn't know that back then. Or I was awful.
What's... I can't really... I think I know Great Expectations, but I don't remember what the character was. What's
she's like the young... She's the childhood sweetheart of the lead character, Pip.
Right.
And they have a lovely friendship, and she's basically in love with him, and he goes off with the pretty Estrella. Estella?
Yeah, Estella. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the part you wanted.
Yeah, you want the pretty girl part. You don't want Biddy. I get a lot of Biddies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've written a novel as well, so which I haven't read. It's not out yet as we record this, but it will be out as this goes out. So that's called Sunset.
Yeah, that's
But great. It's nothing to do with sunrise.
No, apart from... No, nothing. Nothing. Apart from it's kind of based in... real life experience,
sure.
But it's fiction. It's about sisters.
Okay.
but yeah, that was kind of an ordeal doing.
It's horrible writing books.
Really horrible.
I haven't done a novel. For everything I've written, I've just found writing books the hardest thing.
It's so overwhelming at every stage.
It's unnecessarily hard. Just do something easy.
Yeah.
Do podcasts.
Yep.
They're easy.
I kind of feel stronger for doing it, though, so I'm really glad I've done it.
And is it a serious novel, or is it a comedy novel, or is it...?
No, it's very serious.
Is it?
Yeah, very serious.
Okay.
Not, like, in writing style, because I'm very basic. It's very basic. It looks like chick lit, but it's not.
Okay.
So hopefully people who like chick lit will buy it and then be, like, surprised.
Okay.
But it's going to be sold as Harry Potter chick lit, basically, which I'm fine with now.
All you need to do is get people to buy it. It doesn't matter if they read it. It doesn't matter. I've got loads of books that I'm never going to read.
Yeah.
But I've bought them, so the author's won, haven't they? That's the way I look.
And I really think cover is vital.
Yeah, it is.
So we all just did a really nice cover, and it looks really nice. So if no one buys it, it doesn't matter. I don't mind.
I wonder if you get away with just having nothing in it.
Yeah.
And still, and like some people go, come back and go, can I have my money back? Because this is this. But most people just, I got that book. I'll read that eventually.
Yeah.
I reckon you'd make enough money from the people who are buying it but not reading it.
You'd have to be quite clever with, because obviously you would see that it's got nothing in. But that would be a really good like test.
Yeah. Just put shrink wrap it. You could put in, just put something on the front page.
No, you'd have to do something so when they flick it, there would be obvious of work. There would be, you know, things.
That's
on
too
page.
Much work.
That's well, too, if that's, you wanted to pay
write,
off,
you might as well write a book if you're going to fill the book with something.
No, just copy and paste from the internet.
It's got to be completely blank.
Okay. Well, that I don't think you would fool anyone. I don't think anyone is that stupid. Sorry. I have more faith in people's intelligence than you do.
I just think people are lazy. Good. Right. I'm trying to remember what time we started, but we've gone on for ages already.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so it's good. We haven't got that long left. It goes very fast when it's live, I've realised. Sometimes when it's when I'm at home, it feels quite long. It feels quite long. You were in Nightmare. I was interested. You were in the Nightmare Revisited.
Yeah, with Izzy City, who you've got on next week.
Yes, she's coming on next week.
She was so nice. That was the best thing about it. Right. Meeting her. Yeah, and she was writing a book as she was doing that. And I remember her saying, it's really hard. Hmm. And I didn't learn from that.
It's too hard. Mm. Don't do it.
She's really lovely.
She is lovely.
And she's got her first novel out.
She has. She'll probably talk about it now. I mean, you can talk about her
novel if you want. I can promote her novel.
I've heard it's just going to be completely blank. And she's just going to see if people don't complain.
I could, actually. She sent it to me. It's really lovely.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've done better at promoting Izzy City's book than I have mine. It's because mine's about grief. And it's kind of like, this is like a fun, nice chat. And so I don't want to just like suddenly start crying. So that's why I'm trying to just glide over the novel thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll glide over.
We'll
glide. It's fine. You're going to have to talk about it.
I know.
But that's the problem.
I know, but I think I'll be prepared.
Okay.
I'm not prepared today.
All right. Well,
I'm
I won't.
Leggings.
I won't. I'll talk to you. I'll try to talk about Nightmare and you've brought it back to novels.
But no, she was so good and she loved Nightmare. So I was just, and I was kind of slightly too young, so I didn't really.
Right, yeah, I wondered about that.
Yeah.
So you didn't know what it was.
I'd seen things, but I'd never been a fan.
Yeah, I mean, it's rubbish.
Okay.
It's kids walking around in a... It's not even real.
But they got...
These people don't even know what it is.
No, I don't think now, but they at the time when YouTubers were... there were some really massive YouTubers, they got to be involved.
Yeah.
And so that was quite exciting because I'd never met real life YouTubers.
Right.
And they are like aliens. Speaking to them, I was just kind of... They had... YouTuber bought them like a flat, a huge London flat, central London. They had made enough money off their YouTube videos to just be rich at 18 by just doing YouTube. I was just... At that time, I was just like... My mind was blown by YouTube.
Yeah, I've got a YouTube channel, but they haven't given me a flat. I make £16 a week. I've started putting adverts on. It costs £3,000 to film each one of these when we film it. And someone's ringing me up. Hold on. Just go check it. It's Johnny Vegas is a bit late, so I think it's just... they should know that I'm doing. Ooh. Oh, my God, this is exciting. Did you want the exciting news? There's been a crash en route, not with them in it, and slowed them down. They haven't crashed. So the estimated time arrival for Johnny Vegas is 4:45. Let's keep talking.
Okay.
We can do a bit longer.
I'm sorry.
Johnny Vegas is overrated.
We'll do
10 minutes with him and we'll do two hours
sure.
with you.
Yeah,
I've got loads to talk to you.
You don't have to, it's okay. My mum is a massive Johnny Vegas fan. She loves Benidorm. So she really, really wanted me to meet Johnny Vegas today. So that dream has been crushed.
Oh, he's great. He's the best. He's lovely. You know I'm joking. There was something I wanted to talk about from the show where you said that you don't like music or films. Is that true?
No, I do obviously like music and films, but I find when you're dating someone that those topics become so fraught because that suddenly you're going to be judged for your opinion of things. And what if you just genuinely like Frozen or, you know, Backstreet Boys?
Yeah.
And they're kind of like an art house film person who only listens to Fleet Foxes.
Yes.
It's just going to be awkward.
Yeah.
So I found myself when I was dating, I would frequently just have to just, as soon as the topic came up about, you know, what are you into? What are your hobbies? I'd be like, I don't like films or music. And that would just hopefully just shut things down.
Yeah, but I like that. I don't really like music that much. I kind of think films are okay. But then the older you get, the more you think films are largely rubbish as well. But I'm not that into music, and I completely agree that it just feels like... And the people who really like music often really hate sport. I'm ambivalent about sport, so I don't really like anything. but, you know, if they went... They put so much of their identity into the music... and then laugh at people going, yeah, I support this team, and it's it's what means, and they'll laugh at that without realizing that it's exactly the same.
Exactly
the same thing.
I find it really difficult. I like most things kind a little bit.
Yeah.
And I don't really love any particular like genre of film or music.
But do you not think on a date to say that would actually be good? Because I think there's the pressure to pretend you like interesting things. Until you let people know the real you later on when they're hooked
in. Exactly. And also, I feel like I didn't have time to talk about films and music. I was like, I've got two very young children at home. I've got 2 hours to be out. I'm not going to talk about a film for half an hour.
Yeah.
I want to know if we're going to like have another date and possibly have sex. That's all I need to know. so it was everything in that period of time was like sped up. And I do think quite often when you're dating, you get overly concerned with what they like or what they do or what music they listen to or what they have on their walls in their bedroom, when I think that luxury was taken away from me because getting pregnant after having a one-night stand and suddenly, you know, it's not like I chose this person to be the father of my children and to be like a huge part of my future. And I didn't choose that. I didn't choose his ankles for my kid to have or his, you know, his lack of sporting ability. But that's been brilliant because it's meant that I just suddenly just, there's a shortcut to everything. It's like, it actually doesn't matter if his ankles are shit and he can't play football. And, you know, because I don't care that actually Alfie is completely incompatible with me, like on so many levels. It doesn't matter because we like each other.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot to be said for it. I mean, that's how it is for some cultures. You just get thrown together with someone that's randomly chosen almost.
I think at first, because now we've been together for like 7 years without the breakup, when people would be like, oh my God, it's like you had an arranged marriage.
Yeah.
And I would be like, no, it's not. Don't say that. I would be like insulted because that shows that, oh, maybe we didn't love each other. I don't want to like... But now I'm actually quite... I think actually that's... It's great that we were thrown together because it does work.
Yeah. I also think, like, my parents' generation, my parents have met when they were 13 and 14 and have been together ever since. But you basically just went out with the first person you met and often stayed with them your whole life, or, you know, for a long time. And you could make the most of it. And I think about relating, there's a lot of time relationships where I was thinking, well, this one's not going to work, this one's not going to work. And you'd go through... people after people, and then once you've got kids with someone or are married to someone, you can't just go, oh, I don't like this bit. You have to work through it, and that's actually how relationships work out.
I think there's a chronic need to know everything about somebody now with all the apps and stuff, and to kind of do a screening before you meet them rather than, you know, even meet in real life. I mean, that's been really hard for people who are dating in the pandemic and stuff, but you don't need to know everything about the person, and you don't even need to like everything about the person. There's like, I mean, I sound really unromantic, but I'm really glad that it did happen this way, because I think I would have gone on, like, going on dates and thinking, well, that's not quite right, or that's not quite right, or this isn't the right time, or, you know, it doesn't really matter.
No. It's, you know, it's a very interesting journey you've taken. Yeah. With the, but once you've got kids together, that's even regardless, even if you'd never like wanted to see him again, yeah. you would, unless he was a complete arsehole or, you know, ran away, you were going to see him for the rest of your life. And once you've got kids with someone, that's you're connected anyway, at least.
Yeah, exactly. And I think during lockdown and stuff, there's so many times where I think we would have, there's so many times it's been so easy to break up in lockdown. I mean, everyone's been, I think, pushed to such, you know, their extremes. And so it's been so nice as well to hear other people having problems in relationship and be like, oh, yeah, it's been a bit hard. It's like the fact that we've managed to survive and, like, be happy together and in love still is, like, a massive success with this period of time. Yes. And to not have killed each other is a massive success.
Yeah,
in the last year.
I agree. You know, I feel like that's, I've been with my wife for, like, 13 years and we've been married for nine. Yeah, I think that year was like a real, for a lot of people, was that, oh dear, this isn't worked out. This isn't as good as I thought. And so, you know, it's nice to come out going, yeah, this is like, oh, this is better than it was before.
Yeah, and also to have time apart suddenly is like a luxury.
Yeah.
Whereas it was so enforced, the whole thing. And you realise how happy you are when you've, now that there is more space. It's like, oh wow, we just needed to not see each other. That's all we needed to be happy.
Yeah.
He's in Lisbon. I sent him to Lisbon, and he's having a great time.
Okay. Is he doing something out there, or have you just sent him?
No, I genuinely sent him away. just have a time apart.
Yeah,
it's great.
That's nice.
I sound like I don't love him. I really do love him.
That's good.
We're moving
house. I think you definitely love him. I mean, from the stand-up show. But it's like that. It's like, oh, you know, she loves him, and does he love her? So it's nice. It's worked out.
I hope he does.
Yeah, no.
I hope he does.
You're too good for him, but he's all right. You know.
No,
that's true of all relationships.
No.
Pointless Celebrities. How'd you get on Pointless Celebrities?
I won that.
Did you? First go.
I punched Ed Byrne.
Did you punch him?
Yeah. Accidentally.
Oh, I think I saw you punch Ed Byrne actually. Now
he's not happy about that.
When you were celebrating a correct answer.
He so wanted to win.
Yeah.
I
don't understand that about people on something like, something so trivial.
But he from the get-go, he was paired with me and I felt bad for him because I don't know anything. And so I just was being overly apologetic in a jokey way. Oh, I'm really sorry, Edgy. I'm stupid. I don't know anything. And he was not amused. Like he was like, what do you mean? And I was like, oh, I hope I do okay because I don't really know anything. And again, he wasn't amused. And then luckily I managed, I froze doing it where we had to talk about, there was like a thing about countries and borders of countries. And when I'm in a stressful situation, I freeze and my mind goes blank. And I genuinely forgot what a country was. I was like, country? Country. What's a country? And I whispered to him, what's a country? And he didn't respond. He just stood looking ahead like I was the ghost. And then I just panicked and I just said, Brazil. And luckily it did really well.
That was a country.
It was a country with a long border or some shit like that. And then and then when we won, I was so relieved that I Ed wasn't angry with me, that I did this and I punched him in the nose, and I know he was livid. I just know he really was angry with me, but he couldn't respond because we were obviously on camera.
Yeah.
So he had to laugh it off. And he, oh, I'm fine. I could see the anger in his eyes. And he was not fine.
I was tweeting, but I've been tweeting about Tenable a lot, which is an afternoon show I've been watching because I've been in bed. And he immediately tweeted me, said, if they ever do a celebrity version, let's do a being a team together. So if we are, I'll elbow him in the face.
Yeah, elbow him.
Just at some point. He's a very keen quizzer.
Yeah.
You know, I can take it or leave it. That's the thing with me.
Yeah,
I'm just not that bothered.
But I can take Molly them, so I felt kind of he was very happy about winning.
Yeah, but what annoys me is you've got a pointless trophy and you don't know what a country is.
I know. And my daughter, on the morning of show and tell, we panicked and realised we don't have anything for her to take in. So she wrapped up the pointless trophy in show and bubble wrap and took it in. And the teachers said at the school gate, "I'm sorry, that's a weapon, so you can't you can't take it in because it's pointy glass."
Wow.
So it was apparently very irresponsible. I was like, mine's I'm one pointless celebrity.
Mine's all square.
Yeah, it is square, but it's obviously...
Oh, because of the edge. She could get someone with the edge.
She could hit someone with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's true of any object, surely.
I know, but I don't think four-year-olds are allowed to take glass into sports.
Yeah, fair enough. So. I was very interested as well in your show. You talk about having a treadmill exercise class, and I would like to do that. Where do they do those?
Oh, my God. It's called Barry's Boot Camp.
Okay.
I haven't been since I had a baby, but they... And they've really suffered in the pandemic.
Right.
They were, like, so successful. And they basically have... It's in a dark room, and the teachers scream at you on the treadmills, and then you have to get off the treadmills and do, like, burpees and stuff.
Oh, I don't want to do that. I just want to be on a treadmill. I just want to be on a treadmill.
You could do double treadmill.
Okay.
You could do, like... some people do double floor or double treadmill.
Right.
You would die. can't do that.
I'm very.
No one can do that. I'm sorry. It's really hard. Anyway, I could not go back. It would take me a year before I can go back, at least. And I can't afford it anymore. So.
But you're very sporty, so that's probably why you're.
I just like being told off.
Yeah.
in sporting situations, I like being kind of directed quite harshly, just because it reminds me of my childhood.
So there's been a fair amount. We haven't got onto tragedy. We're not going to talk about the trip, but there's been a fair amount of tragedy and unpleasant experiences in your life, and you seem to let it. It seems to not breeze over you, but you seem to be taking it very well. Do you feel that? That's simmering underneath and it's actually going to come out at some point, or is it?
I don't know. I think I'm quite practical, and especially with creative things, I'm very practical.
Yeah.
So I know that work gets you through things, like it helps you. So I'm always doing something as a kind of a distraction. And I think it's therapy. I think creative things are therapy. So I'm just quite good at being disciplined about making work. I'm desperate to do it because I need to get better.
Yeah.
So like my brother died in 2019, and that was just like obviously the worst thing that could possibly happen to us as a family. So I immediately got a book deal and I immediately started writing about death, not him. And it's fiction, but it's about grief. Partly because when it happened, I didn't find any creative things out there that were helping me. And I'm not saying that the book will help people, but it definitely, there wasn't very much about sibling loss that I could read that was fiction. It was all non-fiction, you know, like manuals of what to do in the five stages of grief, which is just bullshit.
Yeah.
So, and it's completely helped me. I mean, I'm obviously still, I'm very early on in the grief process and I'm still incredibly depressed, but I'm very good at getting up and doing stuff, and I think that's partly because I have children and I have to, and probably why I got pregnant again, to have a baby so we can have this like joy thing. But yeah, I'm it's always very close to my, you know, everything could collapse in a second, everything could go.
Yeah,
so try and do as much as you can in the meantime.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think it is interesting. It's just I haven't had anything massively tragic in my life happening so far, so you know, I'm lucky in that regard. But when I've tackled serious subjects, it definitely helps. But you kind of wonder whether it's a deflection and whether something will come down the line. You know, not just with your brother, but the other things that have happened to you as well.
But then why not? Like so Sunrise, we talk about rape. I don't know if you do trigger warnings. Do you do trigger warnings?
I mean, you know.
Sorry.
Isn't the trigger warnings the same as saying it?
I've been told of so many times about trigger warnings, and I don't understand them. Anyway, so I was raped when I was 15 by my tennis coach.
Yeah.
And again, I think that set me off on a completely different path because I was like, this is awful. What am I, is this going to ruin me now? And I remember watching SMTV the morning after and watching it and obviously being, like, distraught. And I remember saying, just watch SMTV. Just watch SMTV, because then you'll be able to, like, get through that, and then you get through the next thing. So, yeah, I've been weirdly practical with everything that's happened.
Yeah.
This has taken such a depressing downturn.
It has. Luckily, we've got a bit of extra time because of Johnny
just
being late.
Bring
so
it
we
back
can.
Up now.
It's really going to be funny
if
in
5 minutes.
You
want to read about rape or death? Just buy my stuff, you know?
But it's, you know, it's admirable that you've not backed away from it. You've confronted it and also talked about it. So I think it's, you know, that's interesting, but it's also then. It seems like, I don't know, you sort of say in the show, don't worry, I'm all fine about it, and it's all, this is okay. And
well, I don't think there's very many people out there that are talking about rape in this kind of way.
Yeah.
And also, it's not talking about, I don't at all go into detail about what happened. I literally just see somebody that the man who raped me, who he dated, I remember who he had dated when I was 15, and she happens to be teaching Barry's boot camp that day. And I see her, and it's about what I, in that moment, after not seeing her or thinking about him for a long time and being relatively okay, it's in choosing whether to now break down of seeing this woman or confront her and ask her if she knew that he was a rapist. Mm-hmm. So it's not, I kind of sidestep the rape bit, and it's more about the social etiquette there of like, is she gonna lie to me, or is she gonna be honest about the fact that she knew what he was like? And the same way with, I think if there's a way of, I don't know, for girls out there who this does happen to very young, it doesn't mean your life is over. It doesn't mean that you're ruined. It doesn't mean you're never going to have sex and enjoy it. Like, there is so many, you can be okay. Mm-hmm. And I think people are scared of that because they immediately paint you as a victim and they think, oh, well, she's ruined. Just, you know, don't count her in to the joy in life because she's had this thing happen. And that's just so inaccurate because there is so much joy to have. And it's like, and especially with death as well, like, we're not ruined. I'm not ruined because my brother died. I can still do things and still be happy. But also this awful thing has happened. And I don't think there's enough out there that is a balanced kind of...
Well, I think that's true. And I think, again, the show, it's not a depressing show. It's not like, you know, it's in a very interesting and raw and visceral show, and you get, there's a lot of emotion in it, but it's sort of entertainment, and it's not let's all be sad about the terrible things that happened. It's very much let's enjoy the funniness of life as well, you know.
Yeah, so exactly. And find the funny in those moments. Obviously, you don't want to find the funny immediately after something bad has happened, but this happened when I was 15. Mm-hmm. So I am able to see funny aspects of things happening now. Obviously, I'm not making light of rape, and some people don't get over it, and it is life-changing, but there are different scales for it, and I was one of the lucky ones. Mm. And as a result, I'm able to kind of like probably make really bad, offensive jokes, which shouldn't be allowed. And talk about it way too openly and too quickly. Like on the first date with Alfie, the one that I got pregnant, I probably spent 95% about talking about rape. that's what happened. Like I speak too freely about it because it happened to me. So why can't I?
I think that's true. And I think, you know, but also everyone's allowed to respond to stuff in the way they want to respond to it. So, you know, people are allowed not to talk about it, obviously. But I think I've found talking about stuff in my life and hearing other people talking about stuff in their life is a great way of communicating and helping. And I found laughing about things, the bad things in my life, has been a great way of getting through it. Now, some people don't like a joke, even in the far distance of a subject, even touching on a subject. And it's not, that's not up to anyone else to decide. I mean, they can decide not to come and see a show that has jokes like that in it. But the show that we're talking about is not in any way making light of the subject.
No, but that was so embarrassing to film as well, because when you're doing it live in front of an audience, they trust you that you've made them laugh a minute ago. So they kind of like, they trust that you're going to make them laugh. But when you're just saying it to a camera,
yes,
it's so much more intimate and direct. And I found that was the only bit of it watching back. I was like, I don't want that in there. But then I had to have it in there, but it just felt way too personal.
Yeah. But that whole show, and that's what's and the book as well, the cartoons. I think there's just it's the honesty in it, and the honesty to portray us. It's not a side. You're not portraying. This is my best self. You know, this you're picking out those neuroses and the within the cartoons the ways you deal in one deals within relationships and says one thing and does another, and it's really great to see that openly stated. I think especially for anyone who's thinking, is it weird that, you know, I want someone to text me back immediately or anything, you know, those tiny things in relationships. So, you know, I think for me it's great, and it makes that show very electric. I think the whole thing of it, because I think it's not within the show, it's not even concluded, you know, your life, you know, that it's an ongoing thing you're talking about. So it's because of that rawness and that openness, it's sort of a very interesting thing to artistically experience, because you're still left thinking, oh, I wonder what will happen to them, and you know, and when she's older, what will she think of this? And so, you know, it's
I definitely think I will regret doing it, but I'm really glad that I did now.
But that's, you know, but I think that's also the thing with doing a stand-up show that's a personal thing. You don't know how you're going to be in 10 years or 15 years. You don't know how the world's going to be in 10 or 15 years. And things have to be judged by where they're from and where they came from. So, you know.
Totally,
So okay, I'm going to win it back. You've trumped my bloody bollock now, haven't you? That's the thing. I thought I was winning with the bollock, and I'm going to have to come up with something better than that now. it's okay. It's really interesting, and thank you for talking about it. It's really cool for you to talk about.
I feel like everybody in this room hates me, so that's really sweet. Thank you.
Yes, there we go.
That's nice.
That's very good.
Thank you.
Let's ask you let's ask you a random emergency question that could be anything.
Okay. Oh God.
But most of them are just so. okay, here's a good question. At what point, this is interesting, at what point of decay do you throw away your underwear? I've noticed, by the way, that my son's underwear is like basically just some string with, like, in the rough shape of some pants that we can still just about get away with putting on. And he's still happy, so.
Yeah, it's fine. Sew it back together.
Yeah, I don't even do that. Just if it fits on.
I still have underwear that I've had since I was a teenager.
Have you?
Like awful taste in bras and things like. But if it fits me, and I like how it feels, it doesn't feel uncomfortable, I never throw it away, and I don't think I ever will.
Okay.
But they look disgusting.
Yeah.
So I now have to have like a separate thing for when I know that no one's going to see me in my underwear. I just wear the underwear that I want to wear that I've had since I was probably 12. Yeah. And then if I know that it's actually going to be seen, I wear it for the smallest amount of time possible. So I even say to Alfie, like, okay, are you ready? And then I quickly get on, and then I go in, and that's it. It's like literally 5 minutes. Hate it. I hate underwear.
Yeah. Oh, it's interesting. I used to go, if your like a bollock was actually hanging out, then I'd throw away. But I regret that now. Those could still have been used. Threw quite a lot out. I don't know where. I went through a period last year where a lot of my pants were going through at the same point where there was just like, which was sort of around the balls. Like there was a hole and I couldn't work out, is it just what I'm wearing? And I don't know whether, because one of my balls just got gradually bigger and bigger until we had to take it away. And I just don't know whether that was, they were all, whether that design was just because my ball had been rubbing against and had rubbed them away, or whether it's just a coincidence. I don't know. I don't know, Jesse. Do you think you've got troubles? look, we've done eight. It's been really terrific to me.
You look so relieved.
I'm a huge fan of everything you're doing. It's really great, and I'm really looking forward to the novel. I do recommend the books and you can get the live show now and stream it straight away. And by the time this is out as a podcast, you better buy the novel as well, which I have not yet read, but I'm very much looking forward to. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm sorry I've depressed you and everybody in the audience.
I like being depressed.
Okay, good. Good.
My life's so good. I like to bring it down every now and again. Is there anything else coming up we should look out for?
Just my book and my show, Sunrise and Sunset.
Yeah, brilliant.
Which is very unoriginal.
There's nowhere to go. Sun in the sky could be next. Sun just up. Noon, 11 o'clock in the morning. You could do that. Sun at 11 o'clock. Sun's up.
Sunlight. Okay, I'll do that. Sunlight.
Be fine. We've got loads of ideas. We've got the other thing we have to do as well. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please give a massive round of applause? Amazing. Jessie Cave. Thank you. We'll be back at some point. Have a drink with Johnny.
You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Jessie Cave. Thank you to Scant Regard for this beautiful music. I'd also like to thank and am indebted to Ben Walker, my producer, and Chris Evans, not that one, as well as everyone at the Clapham, the Grand. Thank you so much for having us and the wonderful welcome you have given us over these few weeks we've been with you. This is Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Head to GoFasterStripe.com/... badges, and you can become a monthly badger. You will get all the info on the guests for the autumn run of Rahulastapa at the Leicester Square Theatre ahead of everyone else, plus a ticket link before everyone else, so you can buy tickets before they become available to the non-badge scum, and all of your money goes to making more podcasts, and you get loads of extras as well. So what more do you want? Thanks for listening. Bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.